Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Well, perhaps this might be actually the good news section of the hour, and we'll see. But basically, it is this: that Helen Ziller is seriously considering making herself available to run as the DA candidate in next year's election for mayor of Johannesburg. Now, bear in mind that at the end of 2026, we will be having local elections, and this is where all this will happen. Now, the reports say that the political pundits were taken by surprise, but a few weeks ago I had an inkling that this might well happen from my deep throat sources within my limited spying, shall we say, capacity. Now, I think there's a lot to be said for this. The fact that she's been, in the last few years, been the target of a lot of unpleasantness in the media has largely been as a result, to my mind, of media creations that have come out of the period when she tweeted and made comments about Singapore and what can be done in the as a consequence to being a previously colonized state. Now, the other thing is, and I did I was involved in formulating a report on the public service recently, and in the process, I was looking into a report done by Princeton on what effect the change in Cape Town had happened when the change from ANC governance to DA governance, and the process was extraordinary. It was very, very hard work. Ziller was at the forefront of it as the mayor of Cape Town. And it's clear that the approach that they took was fundamental to ultimately leading to Cape Town being a much better run city than Joburg. And so she really has form in that respect, not just as with regard to all of her political career, but with the actual practicalities and realities of dealing with a dysfunctional city council. Now, of course, the issue is that when she was involved in Cape Town, it was relatively early days. So what damage might have been done by the ANC, and the ANC was led by Nomaindia Mfeketo, who was really not a great mayor, and her subsequent career has been less than stellar. She would face a much more aggressive opposition, or if the DA were to be put in the position of either being the majority party or certainly the largest minority party. And Joburg is bigger than Cape Town, and it has so much repair work to be done, so much corruption to stamp out, etc., etc. But probably if anyone has the personality for it, it would be her. The apparently business leaders have an approach to be mayors, but, you know, the salary is not exactly attractive for them, as a job pays about 1.5 million rand a year. Now, the candidates who want to be considered have to apply by the 15th of June. So it's really in the next 5 days she has to make the decision. Understandably, she says her whole family is in Cape Town, and our listeners will understand that her greatest joy now is seeing her grandchildren regularly, and they have a weekly adventure date, which is rather sweet. Her husband has always been very supportive, but, you know, being in his 80s now and happily settled in a retirement village, he would not come up to Joburg to join her, but they would remain in touch. I suspect he's not going to sort of withdraw his support at this stage. You know, whatever one may think of Zilla, her grasp of facts, figures, and the ability to present them without pause is actually quite astonishing to watch. Now, there are several DA councillors who plan to contest the party primary, who also need to complete a formal application and undergo a screening test and prepare a presentation on their plan for the city. And I've seen this process in operation in the provincial election some years ago, and it's really quite a formal, distinct process. It's not a matter of favoritism or, you know, get the person who greases the palms of those in the position to make the decision. She says it would not be moot if she decided to run, but let's be honest, the task is so enormous. I mean, a senior official who apparently spoke off the record said that Johannesburg is, quote, so far gone that the party felt it needed a high velocity candidate. And I think she would still be very popular because she is seen as being honest, blunt, energetic, and committed. And whatever else there may be, people across parties, I think they will have the sense that there is someone who is, whatever their political position is, who would really actually grab the nettle. Based on her experience in Cape Town, Zilla has suggested that it would take at least 5 years to turn the city around, but that's probably being on a little bit on the conservative side, given the extent of degradation, and whether at, what's she now, she's in her mid-70s, whether she can harness, as she did in Cape Town, good people around her to do the work, the tough work that every department in the city would require to make a difference. That is really the key. It always is. It's about having good people and then just properly managing them. And if they're good, they don't need a huge amount of management. But probably what we would see is management at all. One has, you know, I think they talked this week about over 300 million rands worth of tenders went to either to councillors themselves or to family or friends of councillors. So, gosh, we can only hope that that this would make a difference. And I think, let's be honest, that much as it might be an open contest, it might be the best that we can that we can hope for in the circumstances. Unsurprisingly, the grumpy old man Jacob Zuma, our former president, who used to exude charm of a nuclear value, I think his age is getting to him, and since he's become the head, you know, the leader of MK, he's become grumpy, and I think his charm is wearing off. They've rejected the idea that Helen Zille will become the mayor of Joburg, and I'm sure, I haven't read all the details, but I'm sure part of the reason is that there is a very real risk that she might leech votes off even MK.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
This morning I'm going to produce something different in the way of an interview. I'm going to look at what I'm very keen about is essentially politics is everything and everything is politics. And today we're going to look at the politics at the local level, and it involves the politics of what people, ordinary people like ourselves, can do to make a difference. And my guest this morning is Fran Haslam, and she's on the Zulake Users Committee and has been responsible for considerable and extraordinary renovation, if I can put it that way, of Zulake, which is iconic. I think a lot of you will know it. If you don't regularly walk around it, you'll certainly know, everyone knows about Zulake. Fran, welcome to the Sargon Rogue Show. And perhaps you could start by just giving us a little bit of history of, as I say, what is an iconic place in Johannesburg.
Good morning, Zara, and thank you very much for the opportunity. Yes, Zulac, the city gem of Johannesburg. The land is 134 years old, interestingly enough. It was part of the Braamfontein farm, and Herman Eckstein bought it with the objective of exploiting minerals. When he realized that this couldn't happen, he then laid it out as a timber plantation, and that was started in 1891. And they planted about 3 million trees, to develop that area. The forest became a favorite recreational spot for wealthy landlords and their families. After Herman died in August 1903, the mayor of Johannesburg got a letter to say that they would like to donate 200 acres of freehold ground for the Johannesburg Town Council to build a zoo and the Herman Eckstein Park. And this gift also included a zoological collection. Now, so in 1904, this was officially given over to the city of Johannesburg. And the gift of land was made under the condition that the facilities were to remain open to people of all races, which was actually unusual in colonial South Africa. The multiracial nature of the park endured throughout the apartheid era. And I'm not sure if any of your listeners are aware of it, but during the apartheid years, it was the only park that was multiracial. An artificial lake was also added to the park in 1904, and it boasts the Coronation Fountain. And that was built in 1937 to commemorate the coronation of King George VI and Queen Elizabeth. And when Johannesburg celebrated its 70th birthday in 1956, Margaret Fontaine danced Swan Lake with the lake as a backdrop. And I still have some friends today who actually went to watch Margaret Fontaine dance Swan Lake. Apparently, there were 6,000 people there. The heavens opened. Everybody sat in the rain for 20 minutes, waited for it to stop, and then the performance started. So that was quite a thing and quite exciting. Also, what happened was that later on, Herman Eckstein's company then donated further land for a carriageway around the park for carriage walks, and the streets would become known as Upper and Lower Park Drive, which is where we all drive around today. So the history is actually quite, it's a very well-known park, and it's steeped in history, and everyone loves Zulac.
Mm-hmm. Carry on.
No, and so for people, and people come from far and wide to enjoy Zulac because it's just known for the ducks, and I'm sure you will remember a couple of years ago we had the beautiful Zulac restaurant when everybody used to go and have these lovely meals, and they used to have little tea gardens where people could have tea and scones, and really it's a very, very well known and well respected and loved park.
I just remember I grew up in Parkview, and I remember occasionally my father inexpertly rowing me and my sister around the lake. So there's that personal experience of it. But what made you get involved? I mean, what drew you to?
Okay, so how I got involved was I'm an activist. And I'm a great community member, and I love making a difference. And 30 years ago, I was the chairperson of the Parkview Community Police Forum. And at that time, Lucy Taylor was sort of upgrading and uplifting Zulac, and I was very aware of what Lucy did. And when I was a child, like you, at 6 years old, I used to go and feed the ducks. I then took my son when he was six and fed the ducks. I now take my grandchildren to feed the ducks. And so it's just sort of like a generational thing. Also, when I was 19, I played bowls at Zulac. I had my first wedding at the Zulac Bowls Club. I had my 21st at the Kildare Tennis Club, which is now known as the Five-A-Side Soccer. So I've always sort of had a history and a love for Zulac. And we moved into the area 12 years ago, and I walked across to Zulac, and I was absolutely horrified to see what had become of Zulac, the decay and how the place had just gone to rack and ruin. And because there was no sort of effective and working user committee, I then put up my hand and said, no, look, I've got to get involved because I just can't bear to think that this beautiful park has just gone to decay and rack and ruin. And if we don't start doing something soon, we're just going to have a dust bowl. And so on the 1st of April 2015, I took on the reins as the chair of the Zoo Lake User Committee. And slowly over the 10 years, we've managed to rebuild and rehabilitate Zoo Lake. And in June 2019, that is when we started our erosion project. And I'm sure anybody who walks around Zoo Lake today can just see what we've turned a desert now into an oasis. And that's why I wanted to get involved, because I just felt that we can't let this beautiful park just decay and go to rack and ruin.
And how many committee members do you have?
Okay, so on our board, we have six members on our board, and then we also have a very small board, and we also have a garden committee, which are mostly my friends that I've dragged and begged and pleaded to come and help me. And I'm very proud to say that only six of us have actually, over the 6 years, slowly, painstakingly planted each and every single plant around the lake to rehabilitate it and turn it from a desert into an oasis. And you know, we are registered as a nonprofit organization. We fortunately do have 18A tax certificate from the receiver, and our corporate governance is in place. So we're running a really, really effective little nonprofit organization. But as always, we need lots of people to help us carry on the legacy.
And from a point of view of people getting involved, can you give me the sort of, from the littlest to the, I suppose it's an infinite amount of involvement, but what range of things can people do that would make a difference to keeping the lake in the condition that you and your committee have got it to? What are you looking for?
All right. Well, look, what we always need is money, because thanks to the generosity of the community, every single plant that is planted around Zoo Lake has been donated by the community. The community have donated money towards compost, soil, mulch, and they've really, really helped us. Plus another lady very generously gave us a whole lot of indigenous trees, which we started putting around. And right now we're busy working on an incredible project together with Yansinya School, because Yansinya's have just turning 90 this year. And of course, as you know, Zoo Lake has just celebrated their 121st birthday. And so they're planting 90 indigenous trees in honor of their birthday. And also it's actually quite cute, because the children are coming across and they're planting a tree. Their parents have bought a tree. And in years to come, they can say, that's the tree I planted. So it's a great legacy project started by one of the parents, Peter van Furen. He actually lives in Parkview and has been instrumental in helping us put this project together. I'm sure everybody will have just seen how we've just done the capping of the stormwater drain. That was a project that I really battled to get going for 9 years, because we wanted to put another fence around the stormwater drain, because the stormwater drain that was there, the fence was all rickety and falling to pieces. And regrettably, we had a lot of illegal occupants living in there, which wasn't safe, and it was a concern for all of us. And we managed to raise 400,000, thanks to, again, Yansiliers and the community to put the capping over that. And that whole area opposite Yansiliers, we're busy upgrading right now. We've got a couple of other projects that we really are looking at, and this is where we would love the community to help us financially with expertise. We had an incredible guy called Stuart Norman, who came onto our committee, very passionate, very, very, he shared the same values as us. He was one of our directors, and he was instrumental in raising all the money, doing the cleanups, because, of course, everyone gets quite passionate about all the litter that unfortunately left over the weekends, and that's another sore point for us, but it's something we're working through. And regrettably, Stuart passed away, unfortunately, in January, and that's left a huge void. So we're looking for, I'm hoping, younger generation, people that we can hand over the baton, because we've started this legacy, we're handing it over, and we're hoping that all the young families who are moving into the area would like to carry on the legacy.
I assume that's probably the practical involvement is tricky to get, because the sort of youth, the younger people that you're looking for in the process of building families, building careers, dealing with their homes and upgrading them. So very often in that circumstance, you'd really be looking at financial contributions. But can I just get a sense of what your relationship with the city council is like? Which department do you deal with the most, or departments, and how have you got them on board or on side?
Okay, so we work with City Parks, mm-hmm. and our region, Zoolag, falls under Region B. So we have a very good working relationship with our regional manager, Elton Rankin. We're also very fortunate to have Rose Abdullah as our depot manager, and she's unbelievable. And between the two of us, we work very, very closely together. Also, every single thing that we've done at Zoolag, we have actually got permission from the city. So every single plant, every grain of soil, we've never done anything at Zoolag that hasn't had the blessing and the approval of the city. We have an informal working relationship with them. We don't sort of have a formal, you know, because I think it's quite difficult to have a formal relationship. I know that there's this talk about adopt a park and what's involved, but at this stage, we just have an informal relationship, and it works really, really well. Every project that we want to embark on, we put a proposal to the city. They have a look at it, and of course, because it's fully funded, and of course, it gets our blessing. And just for example, when we started our erosion project, we had a project manager, a girl by the name of Jackie Crestel. She runs her own marketing company, but she wanted to give back. And again, that was fantastic because, of course, all the work we do, we're all volunteers. None of us get paid. Mm-hmm. And we put together a whole proposal. It took us 6 months to finally get the project approved, but we got it approved and all systems go. And with the stormwater drain as well, with that capping, we had to get approval from JRA, we had to get the engineers on board. So every single project that we've embarked on, we have to get permission, but we work very well with the city. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the mandate, you know, City Parks will always say their mandate is just to mow the lawn and pick up litter, and mm-hmm. the rest of the day, unfortunately, don't have the money. And mm-hmm. you know, unfortunately, the city is unable to maintain green open spaces. So each community must assist and help make a difference in the area that they reside. You know, Zoolag is an asset for the community to enjoy. And it was evident during lockdown that the importance of green open spaces really makes such a difference. And there's literature now to state, to demonstrate that the incidence of violent crime in a lower, the incidence of violent crime in amongst communities that have good parks, it's a social imperative and it's really important. And we realized that during lockdown, you know, when we had the 2 hours you could go and walk, mm-hmm. that kind of thing, it was incredible how many people suddenly realized, oh, look at Zoolag, oh, look at what's happening. And I must say that our garden committee, we work most Thursday mornings, and the people that walk past and have a chat to us and can't get over what we've achieved. And so we feel really proud about the legacy and the hard work that we've put in and how it's paid off.
Mm. I think what's interesting about the Zoolag, and you mentioned the history and the fact that the land, with it came the obligation that what became Zoolag should be used by all of the citizens, irrespective of race. That was both during, as you say, the colonial period and particularly, and I remember it as such, during the apartheid era. So in essence, I suspect, you know, some people may be thinking, well, you know, it's a well-established, comfortable, it's very comfortable middle-class suburb, and that it may, you know, it's serving a community that can afford to make the difference. But it's also, it has for so long been a benefit to people who don't live in the area, who often come from quite far away, will come from township areas to enjoy, the beauty and the benefits of Zoolag. So it's always served that double purpose. It's never been the exclusive preserve of the people who live around it. And I think that's part of what makes it almost iconic, if I can put it that way.
Absolutely. And, you know, you'll find that people who live in flats, like a lot of people who live in Hillbrow, don't have green open spaces. I mean, yeah, there are parks in Hillbrow, but they love to come to Zoo Lake. And also, if you look at our basketball courts, I mean, our basketball courts are so famous and they're so well used. And the reason why is because they're free, they're in a lovely environment, and we're very lucky that Hennessy chose our one court to showcase their project of giving back. And so it really is a lovely park for everybody to come and enjoy. And what we would like is that we would like more families to come and enjoy it. You know, unfortunately, Zoo Lake's always had this reputation of being a party park, and that's what we're trying to stop, because we want people to come, but we don't. First of all, no alcohol is allowed in the park, and yet, unfortunately, that is something that does take place. We do what we really do need is proper security to make sure that the bylaws are being maintained. I go to the Parkview Police stakeholders meeting every Wednesday. I've built up a very a close working relationship with the police and with JNPD and our security companies, and they do assist, and also the park rangers. So we're trying to make it a safe park for everybody to enjoy and just enjoy this gorgeous space that we have, because it really is a city gem, a heritage park, a priority park, and something that everybody loves. And it's always been our dream, one of our dreams of the Zoo Lake User Committee, is to turn Zoo Lake into the central park of Johannesburg.
So essentially what you're saying is that a lot of the essence of being able to get things done has been through decent relationships, both with the municipality and with the local police, although by the sound of it, one could use more involvement, perhaps from the police, to monitor the problems of, as you say, the party park, the alcohol consumption, et cetera, et cetera. I know I used to take my kids to the kids' playground area. We used to call them the houses, and we spent many an hour sort of just as moms, you know, getting some relief by going there. Fran, can I just really get from you, lastly, pretty much your details as to how anyone can get hold of you to participate in some way or the other, whichever way they're able to, or to come with you to you with new ideas, particularly with regard to promotion and that, you know, attracting more people to the idea of getting involved?
Yes, well, first of all, they can send me an email to haslamfran@gmail.com, or alternatively, they can phone me on my cell, which is 082-887-1469. They can send me a WhatsApp. I'd love to meet with people. We're always looking for more people to help us. You know, being volunteers, one eventually gets donor fatigue and everybody sort of peters out. So if they would like to contact me on either my email address or my cell number, I'm all ears and would love to have more people join us. That's really what we need to do to continue the legacy of Zoo Lake and keep it going.
And that's one's really looking to the young families in the area, the professionals, the people whose careers are really taking off, to provide perhaps new skills, things that weren't around that in our day. And also because they have a stake in the area, they have a stake in Zoo Lake, and they have a stake, particularly if they're having families. It's a worthwhile investment at any level. Fran, thank you very much for talking to us. I'll give out your details again towards the end of the program, and I think you're talking to a community who is used to volunteering, both within the Jewish community and beyond, for the betterment of society. So it's really nice to be able to feature what can be done. And also, I think perhaps just to make the point that you can't rely on those who politically should be responsible for what, for how we want to live in this city. We have to actually do it ourselves and just accept that, you know.
Absolutely.
We have to do.
That's the reality. We all have to make a difference. We can't sort of say, oh, well, I pay my rates and taxes, so they must get on with it. You've got to make a difference of where you live. And I think if everybody just does a little bit, it can make a huge difference. If you've got the passion, the determination to do it, we can get it done. Everybody can make a difference.
Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been a privilege and a pleasure to share Zoo Lake with you. Thank you.
Attention, small business owners. Boost your brand with an unbeatable advertising deal on 101.9 Chai FM. Get 5 ads per day for 5 days for just 5,000 Rand. This stimulus campaign is perfect for businesses looking to make a splash. Don't miss out on this exclusive opportunity to reach your audience and grow your business. Interested? Email info@chaifm.co.za or text 061-895-1019 today.
Chai FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
President Ramaphosa wrote in his weekly letter this week that transformation is not a favor but a necessity. And I would agree. Transformation is not a favor but a necessity. The only problem is that whatever policies and processes the ANC put in place in the last 30 years started reasonably well in the first 10 to 15 years and have just disintegrated since. It's a government that knows nothing about how to transform a society. But they've certainly captured the term, and I've come to loathe it with a passion. And he sees that BEE is a necessary fillip to transformation, and that they are going to use their 100 billion rand transformation fund to improve the effectiveness of black businesses. Now, this is aimed at businesses that already exist becoming more successful. Now, really, it's just essentially, I can't see it as anything more than bribing people to somehow vote for them. He appeals to private banks to review their lending practices to unleash the potential of black business. Now, if anyone's trying to apply to a bank for a loan for a business, let alone anything else, but let's keep it to business, it's not easy. The requirements are high, irrespective of where you come from. And if you don't have vast capital, amounts of capital, or reasonable amounts of capital, or something you're prepared to mortgage a house against, which often people do, taking the risk, of course, that the money that they get from the mortgage will ultimately be wasted because the business may fail, and you are still liable to pay that back. So this has never been a race-related issue, and one understands the call to make it more feasible. And I think most of the banks have embarked on programs to do so. But the bottom line is that change, rather than transformation, change will come mostly with economic growth, which currently in the last quarter I think was measured at 0.1%. I mean, that's not growth. That's a joke, and that's indicative that we're leading to anti-growth. But I just want to try and describe a graph that shows, I think, graphically, literally, the problem with BEE. It comes from The Economist, so it's not even a South African medium, and it's basically entitled "Failing the Bottom Half." Now, what the graph does is it measures change in income between the period 1993 and 2019. It, I think, has only got worse since. Now, the income group, the top 10% of South Africans, black South Africans, their income grew by 200%. Indians, stroke Asians, grew by about, shall we say, 80%. And coloureds grew by about 90%. White incomes grew by about 25%. So you can certainly see that the top did well, but the black elite, what became the the black elite did extremely well. Now, that's the top 10%. The middle 40%, there was growth in for black participants in the economy of about, say, 60%. There was negative growth for the color, for the Asian community of about 1%, 2%. And there was negative growth of probably about 10 or 15% in the colored community. Now, in the bottom 50%, so we're talking about the people that the president seeks to uplift through BEE, the black poor have seen a drop in their percentage income to about minus 20%. Indian Asian by just over 50%. The drop in colored incomes by 80%, and the 40%, and whites, their income has dropped by 50%. So essentially, over that period, most of the middle 40% at the bottom 50%. So we're looking at 90% of South Africans' income effectively decreased between 1993 and 2019, and bearing in mind that that reflects a period before COVID. And the complete failure of Cyril Ramaphosa's policies and his party's policies, this is where we end up. So the argument for BEE as envisaged by the president and the ANC does not hold water.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Interestingly, when I was chatting to Fran in preparing for our interview, she mentioned that on the 121st birthday of Zuleika, which was recently, what her committee did was invite 20 schools to present artwork on the theme of Zuleika, and only two schools took it up. And one of those schools was King David Linksfield. And the entries apparently were wonderful. And the morning at the lake where the prize giving was held was a lovely, lovely event. And she was particularly impressed. And I think kudos to the Jewish community and the fact that the Zoo Lake does not serve the geographical area of King David Linksfield, anything but. Presumably there are people who live nearby Zoo Lake whose children are at King David Linksfield. But the fact that they were prepared to contribute and give an opportunity, I imagine, to the children at King David who are good at art and look for opportunities to express themselves, really was something very, very worthwhile. Anyway, I say that to congratulate King David Linksfield, the Jewish community, for participating in Zuleika's birthday, and it's really amazing to see. I mean, Zuleika, give or take, looks as I remember it as a child, and that was a long, long time ago. One of the risks that my colleagues have suggested is confronting us with this cold front is higher electricity demand, and consequently Eskom has already warned us that South Africa's power grid is constrained. According to the utility's winter outlook, no load shedding will be necessary while unplanned outages remain below 13,000 megawatts. However, if they rise to 15,000 megawatts, there could be stage two load shedding, and during the past week, outages averaged 14,644 megawatts. So a day like today in Johannesburg may well tip things over. These figures don't tend to indicate at all, outages that have to do with infrastructure, poor maintenance, etc., etc. So we really have to watch the space and see where it goes. Next week, I hope to be bringing you the ultimate outdoor broadcast. It's not a broadcast that is outdoors in the sense that you may be familiar with, but it will not be in studio, and I will reveal more if I manage to connect to the studio and bring you all the down and dirty of the latest South African political happenings and perhaps some of the stranger ones. So until then, I hope to see you next week, speak to you next week, and I wish you a warm, cozy week, whether it be by a heater or hopefully the sun will come out sooner rather than later and the temperatures will heat up and we'll avoid potential load shedding. But I hope to give you more of the same next week on Sarah Gone Rogue, and here goes Sarah Gone. Goodbye.